Saddle up your horses. Well, welcome everyone to the Robin Walter Show, part of Red Sky Radio. God bless you today. I've got a program today. I'm going to focus on diversity. Yeah. There are going to be some hard things said about this proposition that everything is better if there's diversity. It couldn't be more untrue. And we're going to cover a biblical perspective on diversity, which will be pretty enlightening, I think. First of all, if you want to reach me, you certainly may. Criticism, constructive or otherwise, complaint, you name it, you can have it. Red Sky Radio 777 at gmail.com. Red Sky Radio 777 at gmail.com. Do not forget Sunday Morning with Robin Walter, which you can pick up via podcast. And on some stations, of the stations that this program is on, some of the stations do not carry the Sunday Morning program. Some of the stations that carry Sunday Morning don't, are standalone because, we couldn't afford time for two programs in certain markets. But we are thrilled on the Sunday Morning program to have added a huge station in Memphis. So God is blessing this ministry. Incremental as it is in its expansion, it's going in the right direction, and I thank the Lord for that. As you know, I start with good news, try to end with good news in between. Hang on, it's an e-ticket ride. Right out of the gate here, though, I want to tell you, I'm thrilled about the increased support for Trump from Jewish organizations. And Jews for Trump, I love seeing those signs out there. Jews for Trump. I don't think we saw that in 2016. They're finally waking up. Though even though some of the Orthodox Jews continue to identify themselves as liberal, which I don't get how you could be an Orthodox Jew and support abortion and some of the other garbage. But nonetheless, the dividing line of the support for Israel and the economy and all these other things are sending a number of Jews finally over into the Trump camp, which along with what appears to be a record number of percentage support from blacks and from Hispanics for Trump, has the Democrat knees knocking. I can hear it all the way here from New York City and Washington, D.C. And, of course, the more fearful they get, the greater risk they may take, of course, to keep him out. So anyway, next thing is I love this piece. It isn't a good news, but, you know, James Carville, Democratic strategist, Democratic advisor, probably hit his heyday under Bill Clinton and the first half maybe of Barack Obama's tenure. I misspoke. He has come out with a lot of expletives in describing his anger with Democrats. Those are his people. And it just is amazing how he has attacked them. He's attacked Harvard. He said, you know, Harvard with $53 billion, and you're involved in all this crapola trying to defend Palestinians who hate Jews. Without saying it, what he has actually acknowledged is that the Jew haters are primarily in the Democrat Party. Now, I forgot who Bill Maher was being interviewed by. I can't remember. She's Jewish, and she said, "Of course, the people who are the most anti-Semitic are the conservatives." And Maher just smacked her in the face verbally and said, "No, I'm sorry. You're wrong. I'm not saying that there aren't people who are anti-Semitic in the Republican Party, But look at who's on the left. It's the left that have become the Jew haters, which is interesting from Marr because his parents are Irish Catholic and Jewish. I don't know who was Jewish, mother, father, vice, and fathers, which one is which, but he's got that mix going on, and I think he identifies as a Jew culturally, and he's an atheist. But he has a brain, and he also has guts to say things that are starting to trouble people on the left. That's another good piece. But going back to James Carville, he came up with something that I thought was actually really pretty amazing, and I'm supportive of. He said, why don't we limit the tax-free assets of these poison Ivy League schools, and actually all schools for that matter, to $5 billion. So whatever you earn on $5 billion in assets is tax-free. Over that, though, you get taxed heavily on the income. And maybe you ought to start spending it on the kids. And this is how he described Harvard. I thought this was an incredible statement. He said, Harvard is nothing more than a hedge fund with classrooms. All they do is to go out there and make billions a year, and they got classrooms. They don't need anybody else's support. They can be as wonky as they want to be and still maintain full solvency as an institution and just tell the whole world, including the government, to go stick it because they have that much money amassed, earning money, earning interest and returns, capital gains, all tax-free. They can charge outrageous tuition, and they make enough to support every single student without charging a single dime. But they just keep making it bigger and bigger. I like Carville's approach. I really do. I think it's would bring some accountability to Democrat institutions like Harvard. And as I have said many, many times before, you can only get to a Democrat through the wallet, through the pocketbook, through the billfold. You have to spank them financially, or there is no way to spank them at all. I'm going to go back just a little bit here because I was going to cover this before, but I didn't. And I don't know why, but it was Biden's Mother's Day speech. I don't know if you saw it. Probably most people didn't because Mother's Day speeches, most people really just don't watch. We don't. We have a tendency to not listen to most speeches on Veterans Day or Memorial Day. We're doing other things. We're lusting for those cheeseburgers on the grill, whatever it might be. We're doing other things, and we kind of want to not be caught up. We want a detachment from the political world on certain days, and I get it. So do I. But when you watch the video of his Mother's Day message, the Mother's Day message isn't about being a mother. It's about being a non-mother. It's about abortion. It's about so-called reproductive rights. Well, guess what? Once you have conceived, you've already started reproducing. So to kill the child isn't a reproductive right. The reproductive rights already the reproduction has already started. Right? It has. Reproductive rights are only about ending reproduction. It's killing. The reproduction's already in place. That's the Mother's Day message by Joe Biden, is about being a non-mother. Can you conceive of anyone giving a Mother's Day message that focuses on killing your children? Executing your offspring in the womb is a Mother's Day message. This is how evil this man is. He is, well, anyway. All right, enough of that. A couple other things I wasn't going to cover, but goodness sakes, we got more illegals raping people. This last one, four illegals from, where are they from, Venezuela? Who knows? No, Guatemala. Guatemala. Sorry about that. They raped a deaf woman. all night long, raping a woman who is deaf. They got a couple of them. The other one fled back to Guatemala, because after all, you can just go back and forth across the American border now. And yet, how many trannies do we need to hear about going off the deep end? I'm sorry, they actually already are off the deep end. So we got this video of a Texas transgendered woman, it's a guy, of course, who runs over a victim with a car, runs over the, an elderly man before kissing the victim and then stabbing the victim. This is your tranny. This is how screwed up they are. This is how in need they are of absolute deliverance from the pit of hell. And I'm not going to quit saying it. I don't care where I am and who I'm speaking to whom I am speaking. Let me correct my English. I heard my mother talking. That's not going to change. In fact, I love this passage I came across in 2 Samuel. I think chapter 22, and I think it was verse 50. I may be off a little bit. But it's about the command to give God thanks and praise where? Before the heathen. My last time through Scripture, I underlined it, and I was in that probably 2 or 3 weeks ago where I was in 2 Samuel. I thought, why has this never struck me? About giving praise to God, giving him thanks before the heathen, the ones who will want to stop their ears, the ones who can't stand it, like the Jewish elders and scribes and Sadducees and Pharisees listening to the testimony of Stephen, giving God glory, and they have to plug their ears while they descend on him with wailing and gnashing of teeth to stone him to death. Well, maybe that happens to you, maybe it happens to me, maybe it doesn't happen at all, or something in between. But we should be doing that all the time. And I have made a focus in this last 6 months of making sure I bring God up in every possible conversation I could, just like today at the dentist and the hygienist. And the hygienist said to me, I was thinking, God, just give me a little bit of an opening, because it's kind of hard, you know. They're cleaning your teeth, or they're, you know, scaling your teeth, or whatever they're doing. They ask you a question, and you're sitting there. You can't respond. It's kind of weird. This one did not do that very much, but there's some that have, you know, do that all the time, and it's kind of frustrating because you actually do want to say something. But I asked God. I said, you know, give me an opening here. I will make an opening if you don't give me one, but I'd ask that you give me one. And she came backed out of my mouth, and she said, you know what? You have a filling. You have a silver filling back on your left lower molar that has a cross in it. And I go, are you serious? I said, no, it's got a cross. And I said, well, praise God. And she said, yeah, it's good to have God on your side. And I said, even if it's in my fillings, don't touch it anymore. Don't do anything to remove it. Leave it there. And she laughed, and then I went on to be able to share some things with her. But bring God, and I'm not saying she was a heathen. Maybe she's already a Christian. I don't really know. I don't have the time in those 3 to 4 second little snippets of time between spraying your mouth and vacuuming out the spray, and before they're right back in, you just don't have that time. And they're on a schedule because there's somebody waiting for me to get done right behind me. But do that. Make this a conscious point of bringing up God before the heathen. It doesn't have to be, and maybe God leads you to say this, are you saved? Do you have Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? You could do that if that's how you're led, but just give him praise. You don't have to ask those questions and just say, well, you know what, this is, boy, I'll tell you, God protected me from something today here because somebody pulled right out in front of me. My reactions were more alert than normal, and I save myself maybe an injury, or God save me from a possible injury, and maybe a $2,500 deductible on my collision coverage. Well, anyway, you get the point. So one other important thing here before we get on to our topic of the day dealing with diversity. The state of Illinois is now passed a bill that will basically mandate brainwashing in the area of alleged climate change. This is not about education, folks. This is about indoctrination. That the schools would be required to teach children that human activities are causing global warming. Forget that stupid climate change thing. They're going right back to where they were, the climate, the global warming, along with the supposed solutions to the crisis. Number one, there's a crisis. Number two, this is the cause of the crisis. Well, there, first of all, there isn't a crisis. Number two, what are the causes of the crisis that doesn't exist? And then the solutions to the crisis that doesn't exist. It isn't about education anymore. Why do they have people have their kids in government schools? Then you have Pete Buttigieg out there the other day talking about how all these things happening with turbulence in the air. Turbulence, and this climate change is involved in causing turbulence. Pete Buttigieg does not even know how to run the Department of Transportation, let alone weigh in as an expert on alleged global warming or turbulence. He's too busy committing sodomy with his queer lover back there in D.C. to frankly know anything or frankly care anything about this stuff. Well, okay. Here we go. We're on to diversity. I have put this topic off, but I just can't stand it anymore. I'm so sick of the term. And I covered this piece a couple of months ago, but in quick form, I'm going to go back over it again because the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, has a diversity push. And the push includes hiring people. Now, understand, these are the people flying the planes. These are the flight attendants who have to know what to do when there's an emergency in the air. These are the air traffic controllers required to monitor the landing of, what, 48 to 50,000 flights a day? These are the ones who now get to be the beneficiary of an expanded workforce to include those who, quote, suffer intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, mental and physical conditions. You know what? I'm going to read. I got to read the full quote, so you can decide whether or not you want to fly or drive to your next destination. Quote: Targeted disabilities are those disabilities that the federal government, as a matter of policy, has identified for special emphasis in recruitment and hiring, which include hearing. Oh gosh, you know, it doesn't matter if a pilot or a flight attendant is deaf, right? Vision, seriously, missing extremities, partial paralysis, complete paralysis, epilepsy. So what happens to the plane when a pilot has an epileptic fit? Severe intellectual disability. Not just intellectual disability, but severe intellectual disability. Psychiatric disability and problems, and dwarfism. I guess the thought is, you know what? The new flight crew is going to be a bunch of munchkins serving not just the business class, but econo class. Is this what we need? Is the focus on we need to have our diversity expanded and make sure affirmatively, whether they're qualified or not, that we have a transgendered multiracial dwarfs working in the FAA. Now, I'm not saying that they couldn't apply and get a job for which they're fit, but to make sure that they are included and give them preference in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion. You've got the UCLA Med School, which has come out. I mean, they are getting lambasted, or lambasted, as somebody would say, some say. Pick your verb. For a diversity, equity, inclusion thing, and the reports are that how ridiculously unqualified some of your doctors will be in the future, and maybe already are. Some of the things which they don't know a rat's rear end about, which most generic college freshmen would know, but that they're being admitted because they don't have enough Hispanics, they don't have enough queers, they don't have enough blacks, they don't have whatever. I mean, I guess all I can really say about this is if you have surgery planned, ask where they went to med school. And if they went to med school at UCLA, say, you know what, I think I'll pass because I don't know if this is an affirmative action hire, now called equity. If this is a diversity hire, you just want somebody that's a different amount of melatonin. Screw their capability, their med school aptitude test. We don't care anymore. We just want somebody to fill our quotas. Forget it. Now, I got to tell you, I'm jumping ahead here a little bit, but when it comes down to professional competence, would you not want the best doctors? Maybe the best lawyers, because the law schools are doing the same thing. We are getting crap coming out of law schools. We have bar exams lowering their standards so not as many people flunk. Hey, when I took the California bar exam, I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy in the world, but I did so well on one part of the exam that they waived all the other parts of the exam for me in a year where 53% of the people flunked. Well, that was a blessing from God, because I'll tell you right now, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I work hard. I ask God to give me wisdom and understanding. I mean, if you don't believe me that I'm not the smartest guy in the world, ask my wife. But my point is, am I competent in my profession? I would like to believe that I am. I work very hard to be a darn good lawyer. And I'm not going to say it just comes naturally. Maybe some it does. But others, we work hard. The LSAT, the Law School Aptitude Test, I took it 3 times. First time, average. Second time, average. Third time, 53 percentile. Average. It's like, Rob, what don't you get? You're average in natural ability. But then God gave me supernatural ability, and I graduated first in my law school class. Hold records at Regent University that stand today. Because I'm the smartest guy? No, because I took what God gave me, submitted it to him, and said, Lord, would you bless this? It's like giving a tithe, having your tithe blessed. Your skills and your talents, give them to God and let him bless and multiply your skills and talents. But we don't purposefully let people into various professional schools, whether it's dentistry, psychiatry, the typical med school, what have you, that are not qualified to meet some diversity quota. And it's not biblical either. Now, I had a surgery 3 years ago, a fairly serious surgery. Praise God, I came through in flying colors. My doctor, who I share almost nothing with other than a love for music, is Jewish, and he's an atheistic Jew. Now, I like him. We have some nice chats. Like I said, we talk about music and this and that and a few other things. And before he touched me in that waiting room, before we went into surgery, I said, Dr. So-and-so, I'm not going to give you his name. I said, I'm going to pray for you whether you like it or not, because otherwise you're not going to touch me. And he smiled and said, all right, go ahead. He's not going to miss out on surgery or the income from it. But I asked God to guide his hands. He was Jewish, so I said, God, you're the father of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I got the order wrong there. I said, be the God of my Jewish doctor here. Guide his hands, instruct him, give him wisdom beyond his own understanding in the course of the surgery. And I came through fine. And boy, was he smiling when he came in to greet me after the surgery. I didn't care that he wasn't Christian. Honestly, I really didn't. I didn't even care the fact that he was an atheist. Maybe I should have cared. I knew I was going to pray for him. I wanted the best ENT guy in the state of Arizona. And he is voted one of the top 10 in the entire state in his field. That's who I wanted. I want the best. I want the competent. But when it comes down to it, diversity without shared values, and this is the key, brings chaos, without virtue. And I want to read to you from Laura Hollis. She's a great writer. I'm going to just kind of pull some excerpts out of this piece that she wrote because it's so excellent. And she wrote about something I've already covered up to some extent or considerable extent, Harrison Butker and the speech that he gave at Benedictine School in Atchison, Kansas, for which he's been ridiculed and just trounced in the media and so forth. But she writes about the tyranny of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it is. It is tyranny. You must do this. Well, what is there about diversity that says you have to do this? What is there about inclusion that says you have to do this to be included? Unless you do this in the name of inclusion, we're not going to include you. And this throws me back to the Groucho Marx line. I would never be a member of a club that would admit somebody like me. I don't even know if that applies. I just love the remark, and I love saying it whenever I think I have an opportunity. She goes on to say, remember that the NFL is not a Catholic organization. The league has its share of players arrested for domestic violence, wire fraud, forgery, money laundering, counterfeiting, tax evasion, drug trafficking, driving while intoxicated, burglary, armed robbery, aggravated assault, rape, manslaughter, and murder. So, they got diversity among criminals, but they have no tolerance for somebody who hasn't committed a crime other than the fact that they don't appear to be particularly accommodating of diversity when it does not involve shared values. Of course, the left only wants their value. You can share their value, and we'll call ourselves diverse and inclusive. But don't bring anything else in here. Don't let us accommodate somebody with a different viewpoint in the name of diversity. Don't make us include somebody we don't want in the name of inclusion. The hypocrisy is over the top. She goes on to say, she says an example to say, I'm pro-choice, explains nothing unless I identify the choices I'm in favor of. Do I like burgers or pasta for dinner tonight? Is that the choice? And I've said this for many years. Make the pro-choice people say, what are your choices? What are we choosing? Well, they don't want to say, I want to have the choice to execute my innocent unborn child. That's why they never finish the sentence. I'm pro-choice about what? And I say, is it ribeye or is it hot dogs? But she uses pasta and burgers. Fine. She said that we hear continually that diversity is our strength. But diversity without more is not necessarily a strength at all. If I were asked to put together a team to solve a complex problem and it consisted of a 6-year-old child, a heroin addict, a comatose patient, and a homeless person suffering from severe mental illness, that group would certainly be diverse, would it not? But they would not be strong. They would have no clue how to solve the problem. We're just getting rolling. Don't leave. Robin Walter with The Robin Walter Show. We'll be right back.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A body makes it look like a pup's got 8 cylinders and uses them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall.
Hey, God bless you. We're back talking about diversity. And Laura Hollister is saying it's not a strength. I'm going to interject things. It's just an observation. It's just a feature. Diversity is nothing but a saddle that takes on the color of the horse upon which the saddle is placed. What are you trying to accomplish through the diversity? For the sake of diversity, there is actually nothing to be gained. It's not a strength. It actually, in many cases, is actually a weakness. Because there's not a place for differing views and unshared values in many circumstances. They just simply aren't. I mean, goodness sakes. So what do we have in diversity? They push it so much. We end up with, discord and violence. We got societal breakdown. And we got med schools losing their reputation in the name of diversity. Law schools. You got the FAA where I'm wondering whether we even want to fly anymore. Maybe I need to drive around the country to speak or something of that sort. I mean, I saw this speech the other day. It was a fabulous piece by a young woman, very attractive young Dutch politician by the name of Eva Vlaardingerbroek. Vlaardingerbroek, Vlaardingerbroek. Vlaardingerbroek. Now, because I'm half Dutch, I can say it sort of okay. And she's talking about this whole diversity thing as it takes place in people like Biden, because she mentions Biden, the speech was given in Hungary, saying that they just have to admit people from all over the country, all over the world, in the name of diversity, that they're going to be stronger by having all of these cultures trying to fit in one country. Well, I want to tell you, there are some Hispanic people who never learned English because the Hispanic community is so big they don't have to. That's not how you do it. My grandparents came here from the Netherlands, and in an oddity, my mother never spoke Dutch around the house because she wasn't allowed to speak it at her house growing up. She had to learn English, made her go to school, learn English. The irony is that my grandfather would preach on Sundays only in Dutch, but I don't get that. But anyway, but Eva Vlaardingerbroek was saying in this speech from just a short time ago, she just said here in the last couple of days, we've had 3 old people stabbed in Stockholm. We've had people stabbed in London. We are having churches burned. She said, none of these things have happened before. We don't have these problems. Never have. We have rape. We have murder. We have beheading, all as a result of mass immigration. People that do not share our values coming into our countries and then demanding that their values shall prevail or ignoring our values. She goes on to say this is not social per se. It's not about rich and poor. It's all about ethnic conflict. And she said, Europe has given up. America, watch out because you are next. All in the name of diversity. She said, the crime in Europe which is now the crime in the United States, is that the invader is actually invited in, and then you make the nationals, the citizens, pay for the other people to come in and put them up. Now, she's talking to Europeans in Hungary. Everything she's saying applies to the United States. She says, look at Amsterdam. It's 56% migrant. The Hague, 60% migrant. Rotterdam, 59% migrant. London, 54% migrant. Brussels, 70% migrant. Hamburg and Berlin are now more than 50% immigrants. That's the new Germany that now wants to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu. You see, somehow they think that diversity can only be accomplished if there are fewer white people. And honestly, I am quite offended by that, as I should be. But you see, diversity is meaningless at best. Meaningless. And it's harmful at worst. You know, I mean, I shared the story with my the surgery, but you see, diversity is not, nor has it ever really been, a strength in and of itself. And, I mean, or let me just go back. I'm thinking back to my days in the Army. I'm supposing, let's say in my platoon, I had Sergeant Ash, was my drill instructor. I still remember that guy. He struck fear in everybody. He was a great big black guy, and I thought he was going to have my blue eyes for lunch. But the fact of the matter is, all my black brothers in that platoon were just as scared of Sergeant Ash as I was, if not more so. At that time, black drill sergeants had a tendency to be, well, they were hard on everybody, but oftentimes they were a little bit harder on other blacks. I don't know. Didn't ever try to figure it out, but that's the way it was. Let's suppose Sergeant Ash, who spoke only English, let's suppose we got diversity in that platoon. Yeah, 6 different languages. How would that work? How do you have multiple languages in a military unit that demands cohesion, that demands unity, that demands shared values and a shared purpose as to what is to be accomplished? You see, whether you have X amount of whites or X amount of blacks or Hispanics or Asians is utterly meaningless. And in fact, it's a problem if different ethnicities bring in non-shared values and morals. Let me just give you, let's suppose you got 7 church elders. 5 are straight, 1's a homo, and 1's a tranny, which is still a homo, because they're so intent on bringing in diversity. Do you think that's a strength? Do you think that's a strength? The fact of the matter is, the issue has never been about race or ethnicity. That is the tool used to bring in unshared values. It's what's used to bring the camel's nose into the tent and followed very quickly by his hiney. We're gonna tear this place down in the name of diversity. We will use race and ethnicity, but it's the tool by which we're going to bring in the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ. No unit is stronger by having more whites or stronger by having more blacks in the military. It's strong by the degree of brotherhood established with a unity, and commitment to purpose and the value and the task to which we were assigned. I had a young man the other day ask me, who was about probably 25 years old or so. He said, so you were in the military? Yeah, I was. He said, how bad was it? I said, well, what do you mean? I said, I mean, I didn't get shot. I lived. I didn't have to go to Vietnam, although I was in at that time. I never had to leave the States, actually. He said, well, it was a pretty bad of the training. I said, well, back then it was rough. It was rough because the whole goal of that taskmaster drill sergeant was to basically make you come to hate the Army and hate what you were doing. But in the process, it would drive out any divisions that existed between the soldiers on the base of race, ethnicity, or religion. And why? Because everybody's life sucked. Sorry if that's too strong. And when I left basic training, Shorty and Roland, the only two guys I remember their names from my platoon in basic training are two black guys. From the south side of Chicago, I'd hardly ever seen a white guy other than a cop or a fireman, and I grew up in a little farm town in Michigan. We hardly ever saw a black person. Maybe we had a certain built-in distrust or concern at first. Drill sergeant drove us out. We shared something. We had a common misery. We were brothers, stuck in the same little hellhole called the Army, far as I was concerned. We were the ones who were stuck there with no girls, not enough food, and all the other stuff that goes with it. And I will tell you how close we came, because any potential division was driven out. But we had to come to a unity of purpose. We had to eliminate the possible causes of chaos. And you don't have that when you purposefully bring in unshared values. You see, the only thing that was different there was race and ethnicity and religion. It wasn't about queer this and who's a guy and who's a gal and who loves sodomy and all of that crapola. How about Rotary? I remember when Rotary was all men. All right? The women wanted to get in. But I don't know if they really wanted to get in, but there was a Supreme Court case that said, hey, Rotary, you're quasi-governmental. You're so big, you got to let in women. So from the 1 year when I visited my dad, came home, we always went to Rotary, came back the next year, guess what? There was a woman president, woman sergeant of arms, woman treasurer, and woman secretary. Did they come in to take over? No, the men just surrendered. They gave it up. It was no longer the organization, and I never went back. It just lost. Men's organizations don't have to have women. Women's organizations don't have to have men. In the name of diversity. Now, I don't know too many guys other than queers that want to get into women's organizations. Women seem to be have a little, sometimes a little different, I don't know, break the glass ceiling MO. But if you want to talk about having to have a certain amount of diversity based on race, well, I'm going to throw out something that's pretty tough here. I mean, it's hard to say, but I'm going to say it. The NFL is what, 79 or 80% black, the players. They're good. And what are they as a percentage of the population? 13%. So should we just arbitrarily go in and say, look, we do believe in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Give these white guys a fair shake and let them come in because you can't occupy more than, more or less, 13% of all the players on the NFL roster. Or you, Baltimore City Council, you're half black, but you're the city's half black, but you're two-thirds black in the council. No, we got to prevent blacks from running. Look, do you see the problem with this? Diversity is actually discrimination on steroids. We know that it is. Equity is simply affirmative action on steroids. And I will go back enough years I can remember taking a job before I went to law school. And there was a new guy that was hired. It was a time of a big push on affirmative action. I'll admit this. Readily admit this. They added a black guy to our team for this insurance company. The first thing I thought is he qualified? Is he an affirmative action hire? In other words, is he somebody who doesn't qualify for this job, but they're going to hire him notwithstanding that he's not qualified, and we're going to suffer productivity-wise because we have a substandard employee. I thought because it was an active program. Mr. Bill McDonald, I remember you to this day because you were far from being an affirmative action hire. He was good. He raised our level of accomplishment. And I also thought it was always humorous that he said if there's one thing he wanted more than anything else, it was to have a date with Karen Carpenter. So I just remember that stuff, but that was my thought. He quelled my thoughts and my suspicions. But I'm just going to tell you, there's a lot of whites who would never say it, but when somebody comes in of a they're gonna observe that person. I'll tell you, whether it's Hispanic or what have you, as long as you have this equity, diversity, equity, and inclusion mantra, and it's rammed, crammed, slammed, and jammed down our throats, others who don't fit that will think that's possibly why they were hired. And guess what? You've led to a condescending predisposition for all the others. Is this person really qualified? Does this queer guy have this job in HR? Or do they hire him just because he's queer and they want a queer in HR? You see, forced diversity actually says we aren't equal. If we were equal, it wouldn't have to be forced upon us, right? It's only necessary because there's not apparently a thought that there's a competitively equal playing field. But when it comes down to something as serious as, well, a lot of things, quality and competence ranks high. You see, there should not ever be, I'm going to break this down because I got to get into a scriptural reference because I promised it. If you are talking about the professions where a lack of competence can cost somebody financially or physically to have less than qualified people or people less qualified than there could have been, who suffers? The whole community, the whole state, the whole country suffers for substandard service. That doesn't mean that there aren't qualified blacks. Gosh, look at Ben Carson, world-renowned neurologist, right? Well, all right, so 5% of the people in med school are black and they're 13% of the population. Well, that is changing slowly, but it needs to change as the level of capability and competence increases. As the capability, if you actually provided blacks and Hispanics voucher systems and school choice, they will rise to the fore. Trust me, because where they can, they do. But if you force it, then in the professions, we are giving up competence, pure and simple, for the sake of some sociological, I might say sociopathic, goal. Diversity of values, morals, and beliefs is not a strength. It causes division. And diversity of race and ethnicity is utterly meaningless. Utterly meaningless. I want to go to, I got to get to the biblical basis here. Because this is what ultimately will matter, right? You don't want a division among people where a consensus and unity and agreement is necessary. Do you? Among the elders of the church? Among some, it's like the schools that have Republican organizations and they're demanding that that group let in Democrats. That pro-life organizations are being demanded by school authorities to let in people who support killing children in the womb. All in the name of diversity, there's chaos. They're out to destroy the unity that exists, whether it is in a church, whether it is in a school, in an administration, of the student body, of the student groups, go up and down the line. You see, and I'll go back to the church and church-related universities, which are really taking it on the chin because they have their values, their First Amendment rights to order how we want to operate and construct this educational institution. And it doesn't include having queers go around parading the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ flag and the trannies trotting around in the name of diversity. It's about destruction. They're from the pit of hell, and it is there to destroy, to steal, kill, and destroy. Clear and simple. But what does the Bible say? They're one of the things that God really hates, really, really hates, and I don't need to go through all seven of them, just one. those who sow discord among the brethren. So somebody who comes in to any Christian organization, be it a K through 12 school, a Christian university, a church, coming trying to be, well, why don't you let me in as a member? Well, because you're shacking up with this guy. Well, why? Well, you're discriminating. Yeah, we are. Why admit you when we should be then throwing you back out in 2 seconds and excommunicating you? The diversity sows discord when the diversity deals with things that do not relate to competence. It is pretty simple. Where there is a requirement that in order to have a meaningful diversity. And I love this. I love going to mixed race churches. I really do. I'm thrilled when I get to speak actually at an all black church in Las Vegas, but I wish there were some more whites there. The churches I go to, I wish there were more blacks there, except some of them happen to be in areas where there just are hardly any blacks and maybe very few Hispanics. But let's just suppose for a second, in the name of diversity, Jesus had to have a diverse group of 12 disciples. Well, I want to tell you something. He did, because one of them was Judas Iscariot, who did not share the values, morals, or purpose, or fervor of being a disciple of Jesus Christ. He was there as a traitor. He was there to betray. He was there to steal from the purse, from what they had collected, to support the mission of the disciples and Jesus himself. You had diversity among the disciples. Yeah, and the one diverse experiment, and I understand he was there, was ordained by God to be there, but the fact of the matter is, that's not how you would conduct anything where there is an absolute premium placed on unity. So let me finish with this. This is the coup de grace, as my mother would say. You got the upper room. And guess what? They were all there in what? One accord. One accord in the upper room. That was a diversity. So, wow, there wasn't cultural or ethnic diversity. You want to bet? Listen to this. Those who were listening, the Galileans, were hearing in their own language, says they were amazed and marveled, saying one to another, are not all these, we're just speaking Galileans? How is it that we hear every man in our tongue? They were speaking in tongues. They were speaking in a Galilean tongue. But he said, who is here? The Parthians, the Medes, the Elamites, the dwellers in Mesopotamia and Judea, Cappadocia and Pontus and Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia in Egypt, Libya, Cyrene, strangers from Rome, Jews, proselytes, Cretes, and Arabians. We do hear them speak in our tongue the wonderful works of God. What did you have there that day? You have a multitude of ethnicities. You had a multitude of melatonin skin colors. You had a melatonin. You had a the widest range of diversity of natural tongues. You had different cultures. You had everything diverse except things that reflected sin. You had the diversity of skin color, ethnicity, and language. But you had unity of purpose. You had unity of zeal. They were all there in one accord. This is why heaven is going to be such a gorgeous, beautiful place. I do not know what we look like in heaven, whether there's going to be any racial distinctions or native languages and tongues and cult. I don't know, and I don't care. But if there is that diversity, but we are there like the day in the upper room when people from all over the Middle East and Asia, down into Africa, of different ethnicities and tongues and cultures, are there in one language, supernaturally given God the praise and the glory. That's the kind of diversity I love, the diversity which is curious and it's an amazement and it's beautiful. But it really doesn't matter because we're all there in one accord, giving God the glory, giving God praise. And the best thing about it, it won't be giving God the glory and the praise among the heathen. It will be unto each other and to the throne and the Lamb who sits on the throne himself, Jesus Christ. God bless you. I'll see you next week. Remember, sit tall in the saddle. You ride for the brand of Jesus Christ. Adios.